Ladies, first of all, again, we thank Rabbi Leibowitz for taking out of his busy, busy schedule to share words of Torah and inspiration with us. My fault that I didn't print out source sheets. We're going to get started, and in the middle, as quietly as we can, we're going to, while he's speaking, we're just going to hand out source sheets. Give me 3 minutes, okay? So I'm sorry. Wait.
All right, good evening, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. Rabbi Turetsky, when we spoke about the shir, so he said, you know, he said it should be easy. It's Lag BaOmer, so let's talk about Lag BaOmer. So I know we're at the very end of Lag BaOmer, or perhaps the end of Lag BaOmer, but I tried to find a topic that was connected to Lag BaOmer, and at the same time, something that can also speak to us moving forward as we now, I guess it's now Lad BaOmer, so as we celebrate Lad BaOmer, and the Sfaradim in the room, so this is like the real day now. So also not just for the Omer itself, but to have a little bit of a perspective on the Omer, and hopefully to also have some type of perspective moving forward into the weeks ahead. We know that Lad BaOmer is a happy day. It sounded like, I was listening from the other room, it sounded like you guys had a fire and some type of festivities of some sort. So we know that Lag BaOmer is a happy day. It expresses itself in a number of ways, and I'll read to you, you don't have the source sheet yet, but hopefully in a few minutes you'll have it. The Shulchan Aruch tells us, it's actually the Ramah in his glasses on the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah tells us, Marbim bo k'tzas simcha. On this day, Lag BaOmer, we celebrate k'tzas simcha. Ve'ein omrim bo tachnun. We don't say tachnun, which is always one of our expressions of a happy day. Tachnun is a very, very important thing. A lot of times in shuls, they always look for ways to get out of tachnun. You know, someone got married like 3 weeks ago, and his cousin's getting married in a week, so we won't say tachnun today. The truth is, the Gemara tells us tachnun is a very, very important thing to say, and it's a very, very important tefillah. And yet, on a happy day, so we don't say tachnun. That's oftentimes an indication to us that a day is a happy day. So Lag BaOmer seems to be a very happy day. We're told here by the Ramah that we keep Ktsas Simcha. It's interesting, the Ramah, as we know, Shulchan Aruch was written by Rav Yosef Karo. Right? We're aware of that. And the Ramah was writing at the same time his own Shulchan Aruch for Ashkenazim. Rav Yosef Karo lived in, anyone know? In Eretz Yisrael, that's right. He lived in Sfat. He actually was originally from Spanish lands, but he came to Eretz Israel. He lived in Sfat. At the same time in Germany, the Ramah of Moshe Isserles was writing a Shulchan Aruch as well. His great humility, the legend goes, to his great humility and to his credit, the Shulchan Aruch was published first. So imagine you're spending such a long time on a work and then someone puts out a very, very similar work right before you're able to. So instead of publishing a competitive work, so he instead wrote glosses onto the Shulchan Aruch. And the Ramah's comments, so as preparation, each of these great rabbis wrote a different commentary as a preparation for their Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah, the Yosef Karo, anyone know what he wrote before he wrote the Shulchan Aruch? He wrote the Beis Yosef, right? Very good. On the Torah, that's right. He wrote the Beis Yosef on the Torah, and he wrote another work. Anyone know? It's on the Rambam. Kesef Mishnah. On the side of the Rambam is a parish called the Kesef Mishnah, also written by Rav Yosef Karo. So once he had written on the Torah, he wrote written on the Rambam, so he now knew everything. So he wrote a Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah did a similar thing. He wrote a parish on the Torah. It's called the Darkei Moshe. If you learn the Torah, so on the bottom there's something called the Darkei Moshe. So in there, his Lashon is a little bit different. It's the second source on your sheet. Any volunteers to read? Okay, so Marvin Bo Mishtev is Simcha. That's why I sent it late. I was planning that joke, and I knew that if I sent it late, I'd be able to make that joke before. All right, I guess I should have stuck with the original joke. Okay, Marvin Bo Mishtev is Simcha. So it says there in the Darkei Moshe that you should be Marbeb and Mishtev is Simcha. So I don't know exactly what happened between when he wrote the Darkei Moshe and he wrote the Ramah. Because in the Darkei Moshe, he wrote to be Marbeb in Mishtev and Simcha. When it came time for the Shulchan Aruch, so the Ramah only wrote Marbim bo k'tzas simcha, which is to be Marbe k'tzas simcha. So whichever be that as it may, The halacha is that we have more simcha. There's a discussion about saying Tachanun the night before. There's a discussion about Lam Natseach. But clearly there's a simcha. And the question is, what's the simcha? Why are we celebrating this day? When we don't say Tachanun on Sukkot, we know why. The Torah tells us that Sukkot is one of the Moed day. It's a Moed. It's a day of, it's Moed day. It's Mikroi Kodesh. Right? We have a list of all of the Mikroi Kodesh in the Torah. Where do they appear? Very good. In Vayikra and Amor, in Parshas Amor, Parak Chav Gimel, we have a Parsha all about the different Moadim, all the Mikra'i Kodesh. So where does Lag Ba'Omer appear in Parshas Amor? Which Pasuk speaks about Lag Ba'Omer in Parshas Amor? Anyone know? There is no Pasuk. Okay, there's no Pasuk about Lag Ba'Omer. Lag Ba'Omer is not mentioned in Torah. Okay, so where is Lag Ba'Omer mentioned? So where's the Gemara talk about Lag Ba'Omer? Which Masechta? Anyone know? Doesn't appear in any Masechta. Where does it appear in the Yerushalmi? I think you can pick up on the theme now. Where does it appear in the Yerushalmi? Doesn't appear. Where does it appear in the Midrashim? Doesn't appear. Where does it appear in the literature of Chazal? It doesn't appear. And that's very interesting. Because Lag Ba'Omer seemingly is a very big day. Everyone's been taking Sfira very seriously. The music fans in the room know how painful Sfira is for some of us. Even though music's not really mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch talks more about that. Now I tell you. That it's mentioned, it speaks about dancing. But for us, you know, the guys always ask me, like, in yeshiva, what about a cappella? And there's one guy, he really sounds like a drum. I can't even tell the difference. So maybe it's the same thing as music. A cappella, not a cappella. What if it's just background music? So the truth is, I always tell them to be machmir. And the reason, not in all issues, in this issue. One of the reasons is because we have so few ways that we are able to really relate to Sfira. Music is for many of us, music is a very powerful force in our life. And to not listen to music for a period of time really allows us to connect to the time period. So, if it's not mentioned anywhere, why is Lag Ba'Omer such a special day if it doesn't seem to have a mucker? We also know, it sounds like you guys did your own celebration last night, but some of my students stayed at the yeshiva. I was going to say some of them traveled, but it would be probably more appropriate to say some of them stayed in Shalavim for the Shalavim event, and some of them, or more of them, traveled to Meron to visit the kever of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. The Sefer Eretz HaGalil actually tells us that the minhag in Tveria was to go to the kever of Rabbi Meir and to go to the kever of Rabbi Akiva, not only to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, but to go to a few of the kvarim of a bunch of the Tanoim, seemingly because there's some type of koach in the day, there's something special. And therefore they go to the kvarim of the Tanoim. We're told that the Beis Yosef himself, even though at certain times he speaks, there's some expressions of that he's not happy about certain things that go on at Meiron, but he himself used to go to the kever of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And we know that there's a big hilula, there's a big celebration that takes place at the kever of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And it's not just a bunch of teenagers hanging out. There's a lot of teenagers hanging out, and there's a lot of discotheque music going on. I was like, really dated myself there. There's a lot of techno music going on. Discotheque, it's like the 70s here. Okay, there's a lot of techno music going on there. At the same time, there are a lot of chassidim, and there are a lot of people who are really there not just to party and to have a good time, but there are a lot of people there that are dancing and singing and learning and saying Tehillim. And there's apparently something very special going on. So what I'd like to try to explore is what's so special about Lag Ba'Omer. Why do we give it such, why do we treat it as such a special day if it doesn't really seem to have a source? And I'd like to go through a few possibilities. I don't think they're exclusive of each other. A few possibilities of what we're celebrating in Lag Ba'Omer. I'd like to develop them and perhaps take out from them what we can, how we can connect. And perhaps on our level, what we can take out of Lag Ba'Omer. And that's why it's especially appropriate to talk about it right now as we are, I think we're still on Lag Ba'Omer Rabbeinu Tam time. So it's still Lag Ba'Omer, at least according to Rabbeinu Tam. And so we can see what we can use for it as we move towards Shavuos. So let's begin with Sfira. Why, if we're talking about Lag Ba'Omer, is the big day that breaks Sfira. So what's Sfira about? Why are we mourning on Sfira? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us in the third source on the sheet, Noagim shelo lisa isha bein Pesach la'atzeres ad lamed gimel ba'Omer. We don't have weddings until Lag Ba'Omer. Mipnei Shiba'osa's man Mesu Talmide Rabbi Akiva. Because at that time the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva died. This is the famous Gemara in Yevamos, and it's the longest source on the sheet that we're gonna read word for word, but I wanna read word for word in this Gemara because we're gonna be coming back to it, and I think there's some very important things here. Anyone familiar with this Gemara? Yevamos Samach Beis Amid Beis? Yes? Maybe? Alright, I guess we'll see. We haven't read it yet. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Nasa Adam Isha bi Yalduso. If a man is married when he's young, Yisa Isha Biziknuso. If something happens to his wife, he should marry again when he's older. Hayulo Bunim bi Yalduso, Yele Bunim Biziknuso. If he has children when he's younger, he should continue to have children into old age. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says in Koheles, Baboker Zara Zarecha, Ulerev Altanach Yadecha, Ki Enecha Yode, Eze Yikashi Aze Oze, Vim Shnam Kecha Tovim. Pasuk Koheles tells us, using the imagery of a farmer, that a farmer should plant early in the morning, but he should continue to plant as the day goes on, even into the evening. And the imagery here of morning and evening is supposed to be a person's life. That even if at the beginning of a life, a person has children, and he produces, but he should continue to produce children as he gets older. Why? Because he doesn't know what's going to come of his earlier children, not in a sadistic way, like, oh, something might happen to them, but you never know. And, you know, sometimes you have a couple that has children, and they don't have children for a long time, and then they have another child when they're much older. And sometimes they'll say, oh, we didn't necessarily realize we were going to have this child, we didn't expect to have this child, but usually, hopefully, like the last line is, but Baruch Hashem, we had the child, the special child, the Ben Zakunim. We know in Sefer Bereishis, a very, very important Ben Zakunim who was born to his father and played a very important role in Klal Yisrael. So that's the sheet of Rabbi Yoshua. This is a machlokas, how to understand the Pasuk in Koheles. What is the Pasuk in Koheles? The philosophic Sefer of Koheles. And it tells a person, produce when you're young, produce when you're old. What does that refer to? It says Rabbi Yoshua, children. Comes along Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva says, Loma Torah b'yalduso, Gilma Torah b'ziknuso. If you learn Torah when you're young, you should continue to learn Torah when you're old. And we know why Rabbi Akiva is a big fan of learning Torah when you're old. Why? He only started when he was old, right? So he says, if you learn when you're young, you should continue to learn when you're old. Hayu lo talmidim b'yalduso, yelo talmidim b'ziknuso. If you have talmidim when you're young, you should have talmidim when you're old. Shenemar b'boker zara zarecha. Same pasuk. Machlokas Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva. What does the pasuk refer to? Does it refer to children or does it refer to students? Now we know that students are children are students. There is certainly common ground between them and they're not necessarily arguing. We have a Yesod from the Maharal of Prague who tells us that whenever there's these types of machlokas in the Gemara, they're not necessarily arguing with each other. They're often giving different perspectives or complementing each other. Now the Gemara picks up from the point of Rabbi Akiva. Amru. Shnayim aser elef zugim talmidim hayulo l'Rabbi Akiva migivas ad Antiparus. He had 12,000 pairs of students, 12,000 chavrusas, 24,000 students. V'kula mesu b'parak echad, and they all died during one tkufa. Mepnei shlo nagu kavod zeh b'zeh, because they didn't give each other kavod. Hayah olam shamim, and the world was desolate of Torah. Ad shebar Rabbi Akiva itzor rabosenu shebedarom. Until Rabbi Akiva came to the south and he taught new students. And who are they? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. And they're the ones who continued the chain of Torah. Tana, the Gemara ends, Kula Mesu, mi Pesach, v'ad Atzeres. They all died from Pesach till Atzeres. And Amar Rabbi Chama bar Abba, V'item Rabbi Chia bar Alvin, Kulan Mesu Misara, they all died a very painful death. Maihi Amar Rav Nachman Aschara. That's the name of the disease, diphtheria, I think is how they translate it. They all died a very painful death. This is the Gemara in Yevamos, and this is the source in Chazal for what we're always told, that during the time period of Sfira, from Pesach until Shavuos, the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva died, and that's why we have a mourning period. The truth is, historically, the period of Sfira seems to have picked up pace in terms of the seriousness that we treated it with the seriousness that we took the time period for fast for mourning during the Crusades. Much, much later, in the time of the Crusades, there were many Crusades that took place specifically during this time. And for that reason, it gained added significance, this mourning period, where they mourned not only the death of Rabbi Akiva students, but also the many great Torah scholars that were killed during the Crusades. Okay, so this is now the backdrop. We now know why we are mourning during the Sfira. So why do we break our mourning? Why do we stop mourning when it gets to Lag BaOmer? Seemingly, the reason why I read this Gemara to you is because seemingly there should be some type of connection between Lag BaOmer, which breaks the mourning period, and the original reason of why we started mourning, which was the death of Rabbi Akiva students. So, what's one reason why we stop mourning on Lag BaOmer? Something connected to the students of Rabbi Akiva? Students stop dying on Lag BaOmer. Very good. So if you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch says, this is in the fourth source, fifth source, Noagin shelo l'staper ad lama gimel la'omer she'omrim she'oz pasku milamus. Very interesting expression. She'omrim. What does that mean? They say that the students stop dying then. What does he mean, they say? Why doesn't he say the students stop dying? We stop mourning on Lag BaOmer because the students stopped dying then. What is this, they say? There's a legend that the students stopped dying. Why does the Shulchan Aruch use that expression? Anyone think? Look back at the Gemara that we just read.
Because of the Gemara.
What's your name?
Aliza.
Aliza.
In the previous Gemara, it said they didn't stop dying until Shavuos.
Right. The Gemara says that they died from Pesach until Shavuos. It's explicit in the Gemara. So how can you say that they stopped dying on Lag BaOmer? Who says they stopped dying on Lag BaOmer? The Gemara certainly doesn't say that. You'll remember, I asked you, where does the Pasuk talk about Lag BaOmer? It doesn't. Where does the Gemara? It doesn't. Where does the Midrashim? It doesn't. There's no mention of Lag BaOmer in Chazal. So who's the one that's telling us that they died, that they stopped dying on Lag BaOmer? So the Rishonim realized this problem. If you take a look at the Me'iri, says the Me'iri, Kabbalah biyada Gaonim, Shabiyom Lamed Gimel BaOmer, Paska Hamisa. The Gaonim came. So when did the Gaonim live? We have Tanaim. Tanaim lived like around the year. Give me a year. Zero. Tanaim lived around the year zero. A little bit before, a little bit after. The Mishnah was completed around the year 200. I'm talking about secular dates. 200. 200 to 500, that was the Amoraim. Okay, Rabbi Akiva, Tana or Amora? Tana or Amora? Tana. Rabbi Akiva was a Tana. Okay, Rabbi Akiva was a Tana. So we're living around the year zero, let's say. The Romans are the ones who are ruling over Eretz Yisrael at the time. Amoraim, from 200 to 500. 500 to 650 are the Savoraim. Small time period in history, you don't know so much about them. They're like the editors of the Talmud. They put the final touches on it. 650, the Jews now, by the time, during the times of the Tanaim, the Jews were living in Israel. But there was a lot of persecution. During the time of the Amoraim, where are most of the Jews living? In Babel. They've gone over to Iraq, modern day Iraq. Right over by the Tigris, Euphrates River. Mesopotamia, right? Fertile Crescent. Remember from sixth grade? Okay, that's Babel. That's Babel. That's where Babel was. Jews went back and forth between Babel and Eretz Yisrael. So the Amoraim are until the year 500. The Gaonim are around 650 until the year 1000. That's the time period of the Gaonim. So we're talking hundreds of years after Chazal. When we say Chazal, by the way, we refer to the Tanaim and the Amoraim. That's Chazal. When we say Chazal, it means the Tanaim and the Amoraim. The authors of the Mishnah, the authors of the Gemara. People often say Chazal when they don't know exactly where something is. They say, there's a Chazal that says that means it's a Gemara someplace or it's a Medrash someplace, and they're not sure exactly. So it's a nice, that's a good trick. When you're giving a shiur, you're not sure where something is. It's a Chazal. It's like the Svarim HaKadoshim. You know, another term that just means it's in his book, and I'm not sure where that book is. So this is hundreds of years later, is where we finally get a tradition that the students stop dying on Lag BaOmer. There is the afterwards, like in Hasidic literature, they tried to find different remuzin for it. For instance, what was the reason the students died? What were they not doing? They weren't knowing kavod. What's the gematria of kavod? 20, 2, 6, and 4. 20, plus 2, plus 6, plus 4. Anyone? 32. So they died for 32 days, and on the 33rd day, they stopped dying. Why? Because they had to get a kapara for the lack of kavod. So they needed 32 days to die, and then on the day 33. Okay, you like... If you like gematrias, it's very nice. If you don't like them, that's fine also. But this is a Kabbalah from the Gaonim, that the Gaonim, hundreds of years later, said they stopped dying at that time. I have a problem, a little bit, like an issue, with using this explanation, because I'm not really sure why we're celebrating. If you think about it for a second, it's a little strange to celebrate the fact that they stopped dying. Because, do you know why they stopped dying? Because they were all dead. Is that a reason to celebrate? They stopped dying because they were all dead. So, I know we could say, well, maybe they paused the dying. That's what other people suggest. Maybe they paused dying, that for that day was a respite. But then they continued dying. So it's also a little strange to celebrate. It's one thing at the time to celebrate. Oh, everybody stopped dying, let's celebrate. But if they then continued to die, and the entire Beis Medrash of 24,000 people were decimated, no one afterward is going to say, you know, we really should celebrate that day, that one day in the middle, where only at that point 18,000 had died. Let's celebrate for a little bit. It's a little bit strange that this is the reason that we're celebrating. This is brought down by the Mefarshim and Shulchan Aruch. The Pri Chadash asks, why are we celebrating the cessation of death? The cessation of death is because all 24,000, it said he had 24,000 students. And what does it say? What was the world like after the 24,000 students had died? Desolate. So if they stopped dying, it's because there was nobody left. So that's a little bit of a strange reason to celebrate Lag BaOmer.
We got new pillars to rebuild the Torah.
We got new students afterwards. Okay, so that would be a reason to celebrate them, but that wasn't on Lag BaOmer. That was later. Okay, I mean it was at a later time period. Maybe it was Lag BaOmer. Maybe it was on January 15th. We're not told in the Gemara when that day was, right? Okay. So there is another approach. And that is perhaps the most popular approach that we know nowadays, and that is that it is the yahrzeit of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. Nothing really to do specifically with Rabbi Akiva and his students dying. Shimon bar Yochai was a later student of Rabbi Akiva, but it was his death. And here we're going to turn to some Kabbalistic literature. And I want to go through a little bit of an exercise here, which is always interesting. We have a lot of literature that came out of the Beis Medrash of the Arizal. Now, the Arizal, was the Arizal a Tana or an Amoru? You already know my line of questioning.
Neither,
right. So, he was in the Gaonim time period. No, he wasn't a Gaonim. He wasn't Rishonim. He was during the time period of the Achronim. He lived in the 1600s, okay? So, we are 1600 years, basically, after the time period of, actually, I think it was the late 1500s. But be that as it may, whether it's 1600 years or 1500 years, the point is the same. We are many, many years now after the lifetime of Rabbi Akiva and Rav Shimon bar Yochai. And there's a lot of literature that came out of the Beis Medrash of the Arizal. And they don't all always record things in exactly the same way. So it's sometimes interesting to compare. So we're going to begin with a very Kabbalistic Sefer. This is maybe the only passage in the Sefer that I understand, because it's written in straight, plain Hebrew. Most of it, the rest of it is Rashi Tevos and Sfiros. But this is a very straight reading passage here. Sefer Pri Etz Chaim, written by Rav Chaim Vital, Talmud of the Arizal. Says Rav Chaim Vital, Bizman hazeh b'inyan ha'ochim ala kever Rashbi v'Rav Lazar b'no b'meiron b'lamed gimel b'omer. Says, in terms of this practice that people go to the kever of Rashbi, Rav Shimon bar Yochai and his son Rav Lazar, Anira Isi Lamori, I saw my teacher, the Arizal, Shmona Shanim, Shehalach im Ishto v'Yimbanav. He used to go also on Lag BaOmer with his wife and with his children. Gam Heidli, this is a very scary story. Gam Heidli HaRav Avram Alevi. Rav Avram Alevi tells me, Kihu hayanoeg lomar nachem b'birchas tishkon. What is birchas tishkon? Anyone here daven Nusach Sfar? Okay, so what is birchas tishkon? A Nusach Sfard or Edona Mizrach?
Nusach Sfard.
Okay, I didn't ask the question properly. Who here davens Edona Mizrach? Anyone? Okay, so what's Birchas Tishkon?
Good question.
No, there's no Brichas Tishka?
I'm sure there is.
No? It's Shmona Esrei. I think it's Shmona Esrei. No? How does Tishkon, right? Okay, good. There we go. Okay. Oh, man. That was a close one. Tishkon B'soch Yerushalayim, right? That's the Lashon? Okay, that's instead of what bracha do we make for Yerushalayim? For Yerushalayim Yercha. So in Eidot HaMizrach, they say Tishkon. So this Rav Avram Halevi used to say Shmona Esrei every day. And into Uvnei Yerushalayim, he used to always add Nachem. What's Nachem? When do we say Nachem? On Tisha B'Av. He said it every day. Every day he said Nachem. That is a tremendous connection to the Beis HaMikdash that this man had. You should know, just as a quick aside, you know there's a halacha that when you bench, you're not supposed to have knives on the table when you bench. You aware of that halacha? You're not supposed to have a knife. Anyone know the reason? What's your name?
Hadassah.
What's the reason?
It's like a mizbeach.
Okay,
like
so
knives symbolize like.
But it's a mizbeach when you're eating also. How come dafka when you bench?
Because it's like destruction.
Destruction, okay. That's true. There's actually an additional point, an additional reason. What's your name?
Abigail.
Because
I think someone like stabbed himself. Maybe.
There's a concern, believe it or not, that a person will read Uvnei Yerushalayim, be so distraught over the fact. Uvnei Yerushalayim, what does it mean? Rebuild Yerushalayim. Asking Hashem to rebuild Yerushalayim. He'll be so distraught that Yerushalayim is not built that if there's a knife in the area, he might stab himself. Okay, so, do we need to take knives off the table nowadays? So, someone asked the Rebbe from Square Town. The Square Rebbe. I don't know him personally, but I've heard he's a very special man. Somebody asked him, if we have to still keep this halacha nowadays, because Rabbi, nobody's stabbing himself. So he said, you're right. But I think you still should keep the halacha. So that you should remember the fact that there once were people that had to take the knives off the table because they might have stabbed themselves. Even if you wouldn't stab yourself, you should remember that there was a time period where they actually had to make a halacha because there were people who were so sensitive to the loss of the Beis HaMikdash that they would consider stabbing themselves. So this Rav Avraham Halevi was apparently from that ilk. He was so distraught over the loss of the Beis HaMikdash that he used to say Nachem every day. Every day to him was like Tisha B'Av. Happy, right? It's pretty intense. U'kishmisayim achar tefila, when he finished davening, Amar, when he finished benching, Amar Mori, B'shem Rav Shimon bar Yochai cover sham. So when he finished, and he was saying this on Lag BaOmer once, so the Arizal said to him, Sh'amar li, I just got a vision from Rav Shimon bar Yochai. And Rav Shimon bar Yochai said to me, Amar li, emor le'ish hazeh. Now, that is not a very endearing term. Rav Shimon bar Yochai said to the Arizal, tell that man, Lamahu omer nachem biyom simchasi. Why is he saying Nachem on my day of Simcha? Lochein hu yiyeh b'nechama b'zman karov. He was saying Nachem on a happy day. He'll soon have good reason to say Nachem. V'chein lo yotza chodesh ad shemeis b'no adado. And not a month passed before he lost his eldest son. V'kibel kos nechama alav. And people had to come and give him nechama. Nirmi kol zesh yesh shorish liyitziyazu. From this story you see that there's something very serious about and connected with Rav Shimon bar Yochai about this day, and there's good reason to go to the kever of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. And now the Pri Etz Chaim says, and I want to read this passage carefully, this sentence carefully. V'hatam, and the reason is, Shemes Rashbi biyom lamed gimel ba'omer, because Rashbi died on that day. Ki hu mitalmidei Rabbi Akiva, Shemesu b'sfiras ha'omer. Now that last line is a little bit strange. What exactly does it mean? The reason we're doing it, remember, what did Rashbi call the day? Yom what? Yom Simchasi, my happy day. Then we're told, you know why it's a special day? Because he died. Okay, normally day of death is not a happy day. Normally. And then we're told, because he was one of the Talmidim Rabbi Akiva, Shemesu b'sfiras ha'omer. Now it obviously doesn't mean that he was one of the students who died during the time period of the Omer, because the Gemara tells us explicitly that Rabbi Shimon was one of the students who afterwards Rabbi Akiva taught. So it must mean that he was one of the students of Rabbi Akiva, like we were told over here. I know you, but remind me your name.
Aliza.
Aliza, right, right. So as Aliza said, that perhaps the idea here is that Rabbi Akiva didn't die. Maybe that's what's so happy, that Rabbi Akiva didn't die. He's one of the students of Rabbi Akiva who died, but he's not one of the ones who died. He's one of the students of Rabbi Akiva, comma, and all the other ones are the ones who died. This is the passage, and this is the source that we have for the whole idea that Rav Shmuel Bar Yochai died on the day of Lag BaOmer. So I'm pointing out to you when it came from, because we've been keeping Sfira since the time period of Rabbi Akiva. Many, many years. It took 1,500 years until the reason for Lag BaOmer emerged, at least the popular reason, that it's the day of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's Yortzeit. Certainly, it would explain to us why people go to Meiron and why people go to his kever, if it's the day that he died, if it's his Yortzeit. What it doesn't explain exactly is why are we celebrating. We don't generally celebrate on the day that a tzaddik dies. It is true that Hasidim have a practice to make a l'chaim on the day that a tzaddik died, but in general, that's not the standard practice. Chassam Sofer, this is a famous Chassam Sofer, where he speaks about creating new holidays. It comes up regarding Yom HaTzmut. So the Chassam Sofer writes, I don't understand why people are celebrating Lag BaOmer. The Arizal is correct, even though he's 1,500 years later, if the Arizal is correct, that it's the day that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai died, why are we celebrating? The Shaul Umeshiv, one of the great poskim from the time of the Chassam Sofer, even suggests that Rabbi Akiva, that the Beis Yosef, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, who went up to Meiron, he didn't go to celebrate. He went to cry and to learn and to do things in the schus of the tzaddik. And it requires us to justify common practice, where common practice seems to be to celebrate on Lag BaOmer. And there are some suggestions. Perhaps the most famous one is based on a Zohar that says that on the day that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai died, he revealed a lot of secrets of Torah's Nistar to the world. That he was like Yaakov Avinu, right? Yaakov Avinu wanted to be Megala the Kates, but he wasn't successful in doing it. He wanted to let a lot of secrets out, and he wasn't successful. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was successful. On the day of his death, he revealed many secrets of the Torah. And that could be perhaps why we're celebrating. We're not celebrating his death. We're celebrating that on the day of his death, we're actually celebrating everything on the day until he died. If he died at 8 in the p.m., whatever, 4 in the afternoon, since the day starts at night. So if he died at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, we're celebrating up until 3:59, because that's when he revealed all these secrets to the world. Rav Zevin also suggests, like Aliza, similar idea, that perhaps we're celebrating the fact that he died at an old age. Did you guys go to the funeral to the Levaya of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein? Yeah. So we all know as we get older. So unfortunately, we know that there are people who don't get to live full lives, and it's a tremendous bracha from a certain perspective when a person dies after a successful life, a long life. They have a big family and a successful family, and then they can look back at it and be proud. And that's a very, very big bracha. Not everybody gets that opportunity. So perhaps what we're celebrating is not the fact that he died, but the fact that he died at such an old age and at such a successful career. Specifically, in light of the fact that his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, was killed by the Romans. Many of his peers were killed by the Romans. He was able to die on his deathbed, as the phrase goes, that he was able to die, you know, surrounded by his family on his deathbed. So that perhaps is something to suggest. And he was able to, perhaps you can put both of them together, he was able to live a long life, he was able to evade the Romans and reveal all of those secrets. Okay, that's approach number two. Approach number one, students stop dying. Approach number two, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Yortzeit. There is another suggestion. This is suggested by the Aruch HaShulchan, the last source on the sheet. And he says here that it's the day that, in the interest of time, I'm not going to read it inside, he says it's the day that Rabbi Akiva and his son came out of the cave. They were in the cave, we know, for 13 years, 12 years, then they came out and went back in for a year. They were in the cave for 13 years, hiding from the Romans, and then finally they were able to come out, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was able to teach Torah again in public. He wasn't locked away, and that is a great reason to celebrate. There is a possible source for this. Besides the Aruch HaShulchan, lived in the past 100 years, 150 years. He's extremely contemporary to us. The Aruch HaShulchan can't be the first source for this idea that that he came out of the cave on this day. There is people like to point out all of them, though, even though historically it would really just be tremendous hashkacha. It can't really be planned like this. But the story of Rav Shimon bar Yochai and his son coming out of the cave is in, anyone know what Masechta it's in? It's in a Masechta. Anyone know what in Gemara where it is? It's in Maseches Shabbos. And what daf? Lamed Gimel. That's right. On daf Lamed Gimel. Lag Bomer. It's on daf Lamed Gimel. Now the printing of the Gemara took place. The pagination that we have of the Gemara was put together actually by non-Jews in 1700s. So it that couldn't have been planned for Lag BaOmer. And I don't think it was planned, but I guess they could have tried to work it out. That would be end up being on that page. But there is a possible source, and it's just interesting. I want to show it to you. Shara Kavanos. This is another sefer, another Kabbalistic sefer. This is also from the Beis Medrash of the Arizal, and the same account that we just read in the Pri Etz Chaim appears in the Shara Kavanos. But I'm going to show you there's a slightly different text here. Let's skip to the 5th line. So we're picking up from the middle of that story of Rav Avram Halevi, the one who said Nachem on Lag BaOmer. The Omar lo, Emor el ha'isha zeh, Avram Halevi, tell this man, Avram Halevi, ki lama Omar Nachem biyom simchaseinu. Why is he saying Nachem on the day of our simcha? What's the difference? In the first source, it was Yom Simchasi. In this source, it's Yom Simchasenu, our Simcha. If you keep reading, V'hinei lochein hu yeh b'nechama, fine. Now, the last line. U'bifrat, and specifically, ki rashbi hu mechamisha talmidav ha'gedolim shal Rabbi Akiva. He was one of the talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. V'lochein zman simchasenu b'yom lamed gimel la'omer. And therefore, it's a very happy day. Compare that last line to the last line in the Sefer Pri Etz Chaim. What's the difference? What very important point is left out of the Shara Kavanos? Again, this last line in the passage is telling us the reason why we celebrate Lag BaOmer. What did it say in the Pri Etz Chaim? A volunteer. What did it say in the Pri Etz Chaim? What was the reason why it's a happy day? He said Yom Simchasi, but what does the author say? What's the reason? She? What's your name?
Esther. That he died.
Because he died. Yom Batam Shemes Rashbi. What does it say in the Shara Kavanos? What is glaringly absent from the Shara Kavanos? Any mention of his death. There's no mention of his death. In fact, there's a great Kabbalist, speaks English, very interesting man. He lives here in Yerushalayim. His name is Rav Yaakov Hillel. He's written a bunch of books. Very interesting personality. Big Talmud Chacham, a big Kabbalist here in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. He actually did a lot of manuscript research, and he saw that the original manuscripts of Shara Kavanos, is there a writing implement on here? Or? In the Shtender. Okay. This is very important. I would have had to cut my finger open and, you know, use the blood on the... Okay, what's the Lashon? What does it say? It says in the first source, V'hatam. So, there are those who suggest that there's a little bit of a typo here, and that the word Shemes was written, the original manuscripts that he saw, you familiar with what I'm about to say?
Yeah.
Oh man, did you hear this whole shiur already? Okay, I mean, also, you didn't hear this, right? You heard it also, okay, so I can save time.
You gave it.
Oh my gosh, Rabbi Goldsmith, you sat here. This one little piece. Okay, so I'll say very quickly, you'll tell me if I got it wrong, that the manuscripts actually, I did a lot of research with manuscripts, and you should know that in manuscripts, almost every other word is written like this. Literally, almost every word, they didn't write it out full hand. They would write in shorthand. So it could be, as you know already, that Shemes, you sold this point.
No, you're saying it more clearly than me.
That this word... Such a nice man. That this word... I'm going to get you right back. You can try to, you know... ping pong, rabbinic ping pong. You know, like when a speaker comes, the person gets up and says, he's such a great man, he came to speak, and the speaker gets up and says, introduced me. It's such a great place. Thank you so much. And now they go back and forth with the ping pong. Okay, so Shemes, as you know, wasn't necessarily Shemes, but it might have been Simchaseinu. It might have been a longer word that was mistakenly truncated when they printed it. And we find mistakes like this all the time, that it might have been a word. It might have really said Sim. Well, it doesn't. There is still a ches missing in here, right? There's still a ches missing, but there is a possibility. You had an explanation for that? Oh, okay. But there is a theory. There is a theory that there was something that was missing from the word. Okay, that is our third approach. That it's the day that Rabbi Akiva came out. That they came out of the cave. I know this is going to sound scary when I say that. That was my introduction, and now I'd like to tell you the main point that I'd like to say. But it is true. But the main point will be quickly. Will be hopefully quick. I mean, it's not. It's not 9:45 yet, right? So I still have plenty of time. Right, okay. So the fourth explanation that I'd like to share with you is that of the Pri Chadash. The Pri Chadash says that Lag BaOmer was the day that Rabbi Akiva began teaching his new students. It's the day that he found those new students and he started to teach them. And the message here, I think, is very, very powerful. First of all, just historically, what happened? Rabbi Akiva, after he walked all of his Talmidim, and let's just realize what happened here. Rabbi Akiva, according to Seder HaDoros, Rabbi Akiva was 90 years old when his students died. All those 24,000 students. Rabbi Akiva, as you know, got a late start. He didn't start until he was 40. Oftentimes, when you start, if you have an epiphany about how you should be living your life at the age of 40, oftentimes you look back in your earlier years and you say, oh my gosh, I got to move because I have wasted a lot of years. So Rabbi Akiva dedicated himself, Yomam V'Layla. We have stories about his tremendous amelis. He went out to learn yeshiva, a very strange, almost a strange story for us to be able to relate to about how he left and he came back and he overheard his wife and he went back to yeshiva. The man was dedicated to learning yomam v'layla. He put his heart and soul into his students. 24,000 is a tremendous number, we think, historically, for the sizes of the... So much that a lot of people suggest that it's even an exaggerated number just to make a point, because the numbers in those communities were not so large. 24,000 students, this is his life work. Okay, you know how you're like writing an essay for 4 hours, and then, nowadays there's autosave, but I remember from my days, like, all of a sudden you get that blue screen of death, and you quickly like turn the computer back on, and you're looking, and then the essay is gone, and you're like, how am I supposed to start again? And somehow hopefully you start again, or you just don't start again, and you say, forget about this paper that I'm writing. Or you accidentally, you click X, and it says, do you want to save this document? And for some reason, you click on no, and all the autosaves are lost and gone forever. So Rabbi Akiva, now let's multiply that. Rabbi Akiva worked his whole life. Think about like a scientist who spends his whole life on a specific project. And then he finds out at the age of 90 that it's all gone. It's all over. And Rabbi Akiva went out, and he gave smicha to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. The Gemara tells us that he wanted to give smicha to Rabbi Shimon and to Rabbi Meir, but Rabbi Akiva was killed before he was able to do that by the Romans. But Rabbi Akiva had tremendous perseverance. He came and he started, taught these students. Now, just in case we don't know who some of these students are, a Stam Mishnah in Shas is Rabbi Meir. Okay, that's a tremendous amount of the Mishnayos in Shas are Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Shimon in Mishnayos, like when it says Rabbi Shimon Omer, that's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. We think Rabbi Shimon Yochai wrote the Zohar. Forget about the Zohar. He's mentioned in every other Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda is Rabbi Yehuda from the Mishnayos. Do we have Midrashim? Sifra, Sifri, those were written by Rabbi Yehuda and by Rabbi Shimon. Seder Olam, written by Rabbi Yossi. This is Torah Shebaal Peh, these students. Rabbi Akiva, there's a famous Medrash, and I'm going fast now because of the time, but there's a famous Medrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu had a dream that he was in the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Akiva. He didn't understand what was going on. It was a disconcerting feeling. He didn't know what was going on because of the development of Torah that took place in the intermediary years. But Rabbi Akiva is the symbol of Torah Shebaal Peh. And Rabbi Akiva, why are we celebrating that he started to teach his new students on Lag BaOmer? And I want to argue to you that that is the real message of Lag BaOmer. And that's the reason why we can stop mourning the students, even though they continued to die until Atzeres. The students died. Again, we have the idea that they stopped dying, but let's take a different perspective. As the Gemara says, I can quote a Gemara and use the Gemara to support me. The Gemara says they died from Pesach to Shavuos. That means that from now, Lag BaOmer until Shavuos, they continue to die. But yet Lag BaOmer offsets that death and we stop mourning. because that's the day that Rabbi Akiva picked himself up at the age of 90. He picked himself up and he said, I don't care that my life work is gone. I am going to start again. And that perseverance, I think, is the real pshat in the Gemara in Yevamos. Because remember, what did Rabbi Akiva teach in the Gemara in Yevamos? He was explaining a pasuk in Koheles. What did that pasuk say? That baboker, a person should sow his seeds, he should teach his students, and in the evening, he should continue. Rabbi Akiva embodied the drasha that he taught. Rabbi Akiva stood up, and this Gemara is the source for Lag BaOmer. You want to know a source for Lag BaOmer? It's this Gemara right here. That Rabbi Akiva stood up after having lost so many students, and he continued to persevere. And he continued to fight forward. The Izbitcher Rebbe, the great Hasidic Rebbe, the Meish Shiloach, so he writes that the reason why Jews are called Yehudim is named after Yehuda. What characteristic of Yehuda is the reason we're called Yehudim? Why aren't we called after Yosef? Why aren't we called after one of the other Shvatim? He says we're called Yehudim after Yehuda because when all of the brothers threw in the towel and thought that's it, you know, they were trying to get Binyamin back. They finally traveled out, and then the goblet was found in their bags. And it says, crestfallen, they walked back to Mitzrayim knowing that that's it. Binyamin is gone. Our father is never going to forgive us. The whole story is over. And what did Yehuda do? Yehuda got himself ready. Vayigash alav Yehuda. Yehuda persevered. He continued to fight forward. Even when all hope was gone, famous Chazal says a person should never give up hope. Even when the knife is at his neck, a person should continue to have hope. And that was why we're called Yehudim. And that's what gave us the strength throughout our exile to continue to have the strength to be able to push forward. And that was Rabbi Akiva's life. You know, Rabbi Akiva saw that there was a process here. He looked at his earlier years and he realized that nothing happens just happenstance. There's a reason he started, and we know the famous idea when he saw the drops of water, how they slowly, slow work, they were able to bore a hole through the rock. And Rabbi Akiva, after losing those students, he said, you know what, I'm going to start again. And I'll do drop after drop. And even if I don't finish, and he didn't finish, someone will be there to pick up the slack and to finish the work that I did. The Torah and the perseverance of Talmidei Chachamim and those who learn Torah and those who live Torah, that's what we celebrate on Lag BaOmer. That, I think, is the real message. You know, there's a very powerful story that I heard that in the Holocaust, when they were liberating one of the camps, it's a famous story, you might know it. When they were liberating one of the camps, so an American soldier came into one of the camps and he saw an older man in the camp. And he went over to him and he said in Yiddish, because the soldier was Jewish, the American soldier said to him, is there anything I can get you, old man? And the old man looked at him and he said, yes. If you don't mind, I need a Meseches Moed Katan. I promised my father when he died that I would make a siyum for him every year. I need a Moed Katan. That was on his head. That's what he was thinking about. I need to keep my promise to my father. I need to learn a little bit more Torah. That is the secret to Jewish survival. Now, there's a famous line that they say that a nation that can still cry over a lost building 2,000 years after it was destroyed, that is a nation of eternity. That is a nation that is going to persevere. If they can continue to be focused on something, to continue to push forward, and no nation like us has endured such tragedy over the years. And that's the message, that even in the face of tragedy, even when we're mourning the loss of so many students, we can pick up and we can start again. HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, the moon, that's us, it's you. It's the ability to rejuvenate. It gets very, very small. A child, if you show them the moon, they're going to say, oh no, what's happening to the moon? You say, don't worry, keep at it. The moon will come back to its strength. And that's the message of Klal Yisrael. That's why we're compared to the moon. Because we have that ability. It's like very cheesy what I'm going to say right now, but that they say that to rejuvenate, the Lashon of a Jew, that he's able to rejuvenate. He's able to... That's cute, I guess. But it's true in the Yisod that that's what a Yehudi is. He has the ability to persevere. So Hashem should help all of us that we should be able to connect to the Kolchos of Lag BaOmer. And we should be able to find within us, even when things aren't going well, if we're having a bad day, if we're having a bad week, if things aren't going great in life, sometimes when we feel a little bit down, but we should always remember the message of Rabbi Akiva. And that allows us to take Lag BaOmer and to use it forward. It's not just remembering. Maybe it's the yard site of Rashbi. Maybe it also is the yard site of Rashbi. And maybe all the other things. Maybe he also came out of the cave. But I think the message that speaks to us is the message of Rabbi Akiva. The message to continue to push forward and to continue to persevere. Thank you very much for your time. It's always a pleasure to be here. And,